This is a father-son discussion, but it's an exercise in written communications. And it's an exercise in written expression. We're not just talking about writing, we are writing.
What did you think about my Eunice the Unicorn story? Did you read that?
I have not read it yet. But I do know what you mean about it's different when you write it down.
Yeah.
Because I have a half a dozen little stories that I've told, and I wrote them down, and they just look so stupid and on the written form.
Yeah, it's kind of strange.
It has a whole different connotation. And it's a difference between storytelling and story writing.
Right.
There's an art to storytelling.
Yeah, and I one of the things I've done is I got the books of the Bible on audio CD from the library, and then I listen to them. I'll put them on my MP3 player until I've listened to them all, and so that I can, while I'm walking around or driving, I can listen to those audiobooks. And what's really interesting is that I believe that a lot of the books come from an oral tradition. You know, they were written. You know, they were written down, but these things. And so when you listen to the books of the Old Testament, especially, it totally makes sense. It's strange to read it, but once you hear someone speak it, all of the repetition stuff that they do, that's pretty standard public speaking stuff. You know, repeat the same thing six times so that you can.
Martin Luther King was the master of it.
Exactly. It's very much like listening to one of those kinds of speeches. When you hear somebody read from Genesis, it's amazing. And I think, I've started to collect files, and there are places online where you can go and download them for free, and you can just listen to them as an audio format. And I think, man, it's so valuable to understand it that way, you know?
Well, let me give you a good example of that. I went and checked out the soundtrack for the movie of Romeo and Juliet. And then I read the book, Romeo and Juliet, while I listened to the soundtrack.
Wow.
I had the book in front of me, and I read it as I listened. And so what I got was the artist's interpretation of what was being said. And all the intonation and everything.
Yeah.
And that book just came alive for me. And Romeo and Juliet became this beautiful book to read, as opposed to this. I struggled reading it without that interpretation.
Interesting. Now, this was just the music that was on the soundtrack, right?
No.
Oh.
It was the whole dialogue and everything.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah. So I heard every line, everything that was in the book was exactly with the soundtrack.
Interesting.
And it was the 1967 or 68 version of the Romeo and Juliet. Anyway, it makes so much difference to hear another interpretation of what you're reading. It is hard to read the written word. Oh, and so I was going through my Harvard classics the other night, and I ran across Chaucer. And I was looking through the works of Chaucer, and I found A Knight's Tale.
Oh, wow.
It was written by Chaucer, and I tried to read that thing. Holy cow, this was old English. I didn't even know probably 10% of the words I didn't even recognize. And some of the other words that I recognized, I had to think about them, think about what they were because of the spelling.
Yeah.
So then I was flipping the channels while I was fixing breakfast this morning, and there's the movie A Knight's Tale.
Ah, yes.
So I watched the end of it, and in that movie, they they got Chaucer in there, and he's doing some narrating. And at the end of the story, he says, "Man, I might have to write this down." But I just to see an interpretation in a movie form, or to hear the interpretation from other artists. I tried doing that. 30 years ago, I tried doing that with Othello, and I went to the library, and I checked out the album. It was a 33 RPM album with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Yeah.
But I did not have the the album soundtrack did not have the same exact format as my book, and I couldn't keep it together.
Oh, right.
I couldn't track it. And it's so much if you've got a CD or a tape even, it's easier than with an album because you can pause it.
Right.
And you can read and catch up.
But I struggled the same. I struggled with Ivanhoe. You loaned me that book.
Yes.
And I've tried to read it. And I mean, I'm getting there, but it takes so long to get into the rhythm of that, of the language of the book, because it's not my language.
Right.
That once, it's like when I read Robinson Crusoe, you know, it took me 4 or 5 chapters where I just had to keep reading, you know, just to get myself into the rhythm of the language. And once I did that, I totally understood what he was talking about, and I had no problem getting the whole story out of it, but it takes that little bit of initial time to kind of adjust. And I haven't got that far with Ivanhoe yet, but once I do, I think I'll be able to push through.
There's a contemporary book, Cold Mountain.
Right.
But he, nowhere in it does he have quotes when people are talking.
Oh, right.
He broke a bunch of rules and wrote this wonderful book. He wrote a wonderful story. And he sold like 3 million copies. He made several million dollars.
Yeah, they made a movie out of it even.
Oh, yeah, with Nicole Kidman and that one guy.
Right.
But anyway, writing styles are, you have to get into the style. That's right. But I still like Ivanhoe as a great book.
Yeah.
I've got a couple more copies of it.
It would help if I didn't try to read 4 books. You know, if I could just read.
I have the same problem.
If I just read one, I would be okay.
I sat there and looked at the 4 books I'm reading today and said, screw it, I didn't read any of them. And I went and wrote 3 entries in the on our blog. Yeah. I had a real important entry today I wrote about what I learned from my dad.
Yeah.
I answered the question of what did I learn watching his violent action. And I answered that question, and the answer was about anger. And it's about what does a child learn when he sees anger in his father? And it's the unspoken message that one learns.
Mm.
And so I thought I wrote one of my best things today, and I don't think anybody's looking at it. But we don't know when we're striking a chord, I guess, you know.
Well, and I think that speaks to the larger process in general. Sort of, you don't get to decide what everybody's going to be excited about, what the public will respond to. You just don't get to decide that. If movie makers could decide that, they'd make hits every time, you know. But they don't. They just try it.
I have this new book I've written, and Don read it, and he really liked it. And he pointed out 3 or 4 places that he thought were emotionally moving. And I thought, yeah, those are good places, but I would have picked other places.
Right.
But I moved him with my book in places that I didn't intend to be. And so we just don't know, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, we watched the other day, Avery wanted to get a movie, so we got The Neverending Story at the library. And it was interesting because didn't we have that? It was like our first tape that we got with our VCR in like 1981 or something.
Yeah, it was our second one.
Our second tape, yeah.
The first one was Peach Dragon.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's apropos.
45 times.
Yeah, I know. Well, we watched The Neverending Story about that many times. But
I think when I
watched it this time, they did a lot of really interesting things in that. This story is one that the boy is reading this book, and there's somebody watching him in his story.
Right.
And the implication is that there's somebody watching us. It's the never ending story. It's the story that continues because you keep writing it because it's your life. Your life is this story. Right. And it was really cool. But the idea also of his book is that everyone who reads it reads a different story, not because the story is different, but because the reader is different.
That's correct.
So every time that book, the binding of that book gets cracked open, it's a fresh story because it's a whole new personality and a whole new set of experiences coming to that story, and it plays out in a whole different way, even though it's the same book, you know.
Yeah, this book I just wrote, I could have written 200 or 300 pages more to explain some things.
Yeah.
And I intentionally did not, because I thought these are things the reader can have for their own.
There was a quote that I heard, and I can't remember who to attribute it to, and I'll have to look it up. But it said that a good writer loves verbosity the way that a good surgeon loves bloodletting. So.
This new James Bond.
Yeah.
They got a new guy, Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
He's a whole different James Bond. Actually, this is the movie where James Bond, right in the very first 10 minutes, they promote him to a 007 status.
Yeah.
And so he gets promoted, and he gets his first assignment, and he screws it up.
Oh, yeah.
Then he's got to go fix it. They're just trying to decide if he's 007 material or not. And so he doesn't, in this movie, it's in the very end. In the very end of the movie, he quits the Secret Service. I'm done with this. I'm done with MI6. He gets drugged back into it through this emotional trauma. And it's that through that trauma that he becomes 007, James Bond, the icy cold killer. And he is that icy cold killer in this movie. It's pretty well done.